We are up to, we're still in the first parak, and we are up to Pasuk Chaf Dalet, 24. But I left you with a question last time on Pasuk Chaf Beis, on 22. And I can really put you all on the spot and ask you what the question was. Oh, good. Okay. Somebody was listening last time. Good. Okay. Good. Okay. So I'll repeat the question now, and that way I'll give you all a chance to think about it now and see if you can come up with an answer. We said last time in Pasuk Chaf Beis, it says that, I'll read it in Hebrew and in English, Uzmusa Rashay HaChayara Kia Kena Kerach HaNora Natoya Rashayhem Mil Mola, that there was an appearance on top of the Chayos, on top of those angels, a Rakia, a sky, like the awesome ice that was spread out on their heads above. So we mentioned last time that these angels are fiery angels, they're made out of fire, and of course ice is water, and the Medrash says that the fire should have melted the ice. Let me backtrack a little bit. This sky, this rakia, which is like the awesome ice, was a separation between the angels, these chayos, and the kiseh hakavod, and the throne of Hashem. So it's separated between them and Hashem. And we also had in a previous pasuk that the angels were constantly trying to get closer to Hashem, and they were constantly poking their heads above this rakia, this sky, I guess through that ice, and then they were then struck by the awesomeness of Hashem, and they pulled back. But that was a constant process where they would poke their heads out and then immediately go back down. So this rakia was a separation between themselves and Hashem, and it was made of ice, while the angels themselves were made of fire. So the Medrash says that the fire ought to have melted the ice, and the ice ought to have consumed or destroyed the fire. And yet it didn't happen. Yet the two things coexisted, the angels and the separation between themselves and Hashem. So that was that's a nes. Now we're not dealing with physical fire and physical ice. This is a spiritual realm that Yechezkel is seeing. Nevertheless, clearly, what we're supposed to understand of it is being described in physical terms so that we can understand it, and what's being described is something which ought to be impossible for fire and ice to coexist. And yes, it did. So the question I asked last time, I'm sure none of you were able to sleep this week because you were busy trying to think of the answer, is why does it have to be that the separation between the angels and Hashem is made up of a substance which really shouldn't be able to coexist with them? Let's explain the question a little bit. When there's a barrier, let's say a jail cell, so there are bars between the person in the jail and freedom. So those bars are a separation. A person can coexist with bars, he just can't break them. But there's nothing about bars that makes it impossible for a person to exist. But here, the separation was made of something that ought to have destroyed the angels. Not just act as a separation, but its cold that it radiated ought to have destroyed the angels. At the same time, the angels' heat ought to have destroyed the barrier. And yet, neither happened, and they coexisted. So why is it important that the barrier between the angels and Hashem be made up of a substance that really shouldn't be able to coexist with the angels, but did? That was the question. It was a whole week. Someone has to have thought of something.
Nothing I can think of when you have the hail that came with the fire and
good, good.
Triumph.
Good.
They're also the nation Shemayim.
Okay, so you're bringing an example from this week's parsha.
Right.
In Parshas Va'era, where we have the first seven plagues, the seventh plague is the plague of Barad, of hail, and the hail was made up of fire and water together. And Rashi says they shouldn't have been able to coexist, and they made shalom in order to do the Ratzon of Hashem, in order to do the will of Hashem, which was to make trouble for the Egyptians.
And maybe that's the same thing with the barrier, the angels, and the fire. It's the Ratzon Hashem Yud Hashem loves Shalom. Shalom is another name of Kadosh Baruch.
Okay. Okay. So you're correct. You're correct. There's no question that the coexistence of the ice and the fire was the Ratzon Hashem, was the will of Hashem. And there's no question that there is some aspect of Shalom being brought out over here. Two things that really shouldn't be able to coexist are coexisting. But it needs to...
It's not if you love Shalom.
Okay.
Why would it emulate this kind of...
But why within the separation between himself and the angels? That's the issue. Why is it in the separation? He didn't create angels out of fire and ice together, although I should point out that in Tzilas Geshem, when you read about when we daven for rain on Shemini Atzeres, on Sukkot, so there is it's a short poem that is read in Shul, and in that poem we describe some of the things that happened involving water. It's all about water. So one of the stanzas of the poem is about the angel that Yaakov Avinu fought. And that angel, it says in that poem, was made up of Esh Umayim, fire and water. So we do have an example, at least of one angel, that was comprised of both the fire and water together. But these angels, there's no mention of water, only fire. So Hashem didn't create angels here that are themselves made up of fire and water, which would bring out the point you're making about Shalom. Rather, it's the angels and the barrier that shouldn't be able to coexist. So why is that? But you're on the right track. Anybody else?
So we can penetrate the barrier. To feel us and don't have some total. We can penetrate the barrier.
Well, the angels were constantly trying to penetrate the barrier, but they couldn't.
But we can be in a higher greater.
That's correct. We can. That's correct. But we don't... The ice doesn't put us out. Only the angels. Let's think of other examples where we have these two elements that ought not be able to coexist. So I just described one, which is the case of the angel with Yaakov, and we had the other one that was just mentioned, which is the plague of Barot of hail, and we have it over here. Any other cases of fire and water, or any two substances that are together only because Hashem wills them to be together, but they really ought not be together. They really ought to, each one, ought to preclude the other. Yeah.
Well, isn't the water supposed to overtake the land and the storm because Hashem's name
is in those? That's a good example. Didn't think of that one. That's a good example. You're saying the water and the land really shouldn't coexist.
Right. The water should cover our land.
The water should cover the land. Okay. And Hashem makes the waters recede to keep the land livable.
Right.
Okay. But the only difference is that there, the water should destroy the land, but the land shouldn't destroy the water. Here we're dealing with two things that each one should preclude the other. The ice, the fire. And that's a good example. What else?
Good and evil.
Well, that's correct. And ultimately, that's where we're going. So good. Although maybe evil is too strong a word, but that's we're going in that direction. Okay.
Men and
women. Why? That's not necessarily so. The letters of the Torah written in fire, correct. And the Torah is compared to water. Okay, so good. We say a bracha when a person uses the restroom. They say a bracha. Asher yatsa. Yes, so what do you want to say?
The openings and not
falling out, I guess. Well, that's true. That's true. No, not. We're talking about the. You're right, but listen to how the Mefarshim explain that bracha. We have the bracha of Asher yatsa, and in it we thank Hashem that everything works properly. Thank God, and. When the bracha ends off, Baruch Atah Hashem, Rofei Chol Basar, He heals all flesh, Hashem heals all flesh. Umafli la'asos. And he does plia. He does wonders. Plia is a word that connotes an incredible miracle. A simple miracle, just a regular old miracle, you know, like, I don't know, like vinegar burning instead of oil burning, that's a nace. A plia is an incredible miracle, something beyond even regular miracles. So that's a plia. So here Hashem does a plia. He's mafli la'asos. He does incredible miracles with our bodies. So what is that incredible miracle? So anybody can look at the physical body and say it's an incredible miracle that everything works properly. But that's all natural. But what's supernatural? So the Mefarshim say, the commentaries say, that it's supernatural that Hashem blew into Adam's nostrils a living soul, which is a spiritual entity, and he combined that with a physical body. The two ought to reject each other. For a spiritual entity and a physical entity to be fused together in one creature, that is man, is in itself perhaps the greatest miracle of all. And that's the mafli la'asos that Hashem does. And that's really how they say it, that Hashem blew the soul into the nostrils. Why doesn't it just come out? So it's not like, you know, you have a water balloon, you poke a hole in it, the water's going to come out. That's what we're meant to conjure up when we think about it. But what's really being brought out is that the physical and spiritual ought to reject each other. The spiritual longs and yearns for Hashem. The physical longs and yearns for this world, for the physical universe, for all of the materialism that this world has to offer. And the two being fused together is in itself a plia, is in itself an incredible miracle. Now we know, as we've spoken about, that ultimately that's the struggle that we are meant to have, is that struggle between the physical and the spiritual. Even though they're fused together, but they are pulling in different directions. So one is pulling this way, one is pulling that way, and it's our job to ensure that the spiritual wins out over the physical. But they don't rip each other apart. That's the process of death. Death is when the two part from each other. But in a person's lifetime, during the struggle, it's simply a struggle. But the two remain connected, the spiritual and the physical. And that's an incredible thing. So there you have two substances or two entities that ought to preclude each other but don't. And that is an incredible miracle. Now, that in and of itself doesn't create shalom, as I just mentioned, because there's a struggle. There's a struggle. They say this world was made, meaning that who enjoys life the most? The person who is completely good or completely evil. If you're completely good, or God forbid someone is completely evil, then they enjoy this world because they have no struggles. There's no struggle. It's easy. You do whatever you like to do. But most of us, where we're somewhere in the middle, we're constantly struggling. So life is tough. So the fact that there are two entities that preclude each other, that are fused together in the human being, does not create shalom. Instead, it creates milchama. It creates battle. It creates the battle that life is. That the reason why we exist, to wage that war and to overcome. But that is the way Hashem made it, that there should be that struggle where you have these two entities fused together. Now let's take that thought and try to work it back to what we have here in Yechezkel. So we have the fire and water together for the plague of Barad, of hail, where the two entities that ought to preclude each other come together, and there it's shalom, there's peace. They make peace with each other in order to do the will of Hashem. We have the fire and water coming together in that one case of the angel I mentioned. You have here the hail, the ice, and the fire of the angels, and they are able to coexist. Now, are they coexisting in the form of shalom or a form of milchama, of battle? How would you say it over here? Do these two items, the angels that are made of fire and the barrier that's made of ice, which are now coexisting and not wiping each other out, are they coexisting peacefully or in milchama, in battle? Okay, we have a difference of opinion. Okay, I heard milchama on this side. Let's explain the milchama.
Because the angels try to go up, but it resists them.
Okay, okay. And I heard Shalom over here.
Because there's an eruption of Hashem. I think in that sphere, there wouldn't be any...
Okay, but remember, that sphere, the spiritual sphere, as we have mentioned over and over again, is meant to reflect the physical world, either to reflect what has already happened or will happen. But that's what it's meant to do, or what it ought to be. But it's meant to reflect what's happening over here. So
the struggle, because if they're reflecting what's here, we're always in the struggle.
Okay, okay. So what we have there is, what we have in Shamayim, what Yechezkel is seeing, and this goes on all the time, what he sees is these two entities that are really at war with each other, not at war like with weapons, and it's not like they have free will, but you have this barrier that is meant to keep the angels away from Hashem, because even the angels can't see the essence of Hashem. And like we said last week, ultimately we Jews have the capacity to get closer to Hashem even than the angels. We're able to go beyond the angels. So the angels are kept their distance from Hashem, even though they're much closer than we are here in this world. But nevertheless, there is a distance that this barrier keeps them from, keeps them at. But at the same time, the angels are constantly trying to break through that barrier. And so they're constantly poking their heads above the barrier to see the grandeur of Hashem. And when they see it, they are awestruck and they recede, they pull back. That barrier and those angels are really in a struggle with each other. The barrier is pushing them away, and they are trying to get closer. That reflects what we have down here. It reflects what a human being is and ought to be. We are, in and of ourselves, what we call a stira, a contradiction. We are physical, and we are spiritual. And the physical is constantly trying to repel us, to take us away from Hashem. And the spiritual is constantly trying to pull us closer to Hashem. And that's the battle that is going on. But think of the analogy of the angels and the barrier. Let me say the same thing, the same lesson, but in a different way. Let me just represent it a little differently, which is not true, which is not in Yechezkel. But listen to, what if the Sukkim would have said it this way? Hashem created these angels. And these angels are constantly trying to get away from Hashem. But there's this barrier that's constantly pushing them towards Hashem. Two entities. One is trying to get away from Hashem, and one is trying to push towards Hashem. That also would have reflected what goes on down here. But it doesn't really. It doesn't really. That would have been inaccurate. That would not have reflected what's going on down here. What actually is reflecting what's going on down here is angels trying to get close to Hashem and a barrier repelling them. Do you hear the difference? It's not angels trying to get away from Hashem with a barrier pushing them closer, a barrier stopping their escape. Rather, it's angels trying to get close to Hashem and a barrier preventing their getting too close. Do you hear the difference? It's a much more positive approach. Are we, in our essence, with these two warring entities of spiritual and physical, are we a being? We are actually, each one of us is one being. We are each a being that is made up of both physical and spiritual. But am I a being that at my essence am trying to get close to Hashem, but there is a barrier that is making it difficult for me? Or am I, God forbid, a being that is at my essence trying to get away from Hashem, but there's a barrier that is keeping me from getting too far away? I think the difference is clear and obvious. We are meant to think of ourselves in what we really are, which is that we are an entity, each one of us. We are a person that is at our essence trying to get close to Hashem. But there is something called the Yetzer Hara, the physical side of ourselves, which is a barrier which is attempting to push us away from Hashem. But that's not who we are. We are really the being that is trying to get close to Hashem. If you think it through, this may, more than anything else, bring out the difference between the Jewish perspective on life and the Christian perspective. At our essence, we are beings that want to be close to Hashem. That is who we are. We have the Yetzer Hara. It's a real thing, the Yetzer Hara. And we have to struggle with it. And it's there for a reason. Hashem put it there so that we would have to struggle. That's the whole point. So that we can earn our keep, as we talked about. But we are beings who want to be close to Hashem. That is who we are. And a person should never think of themselves as, oh, I am someone who doesn't want to be near Hashem. I'm a person who sins. No, I'm a person who doesn't sin, but unfortunately there is a Yetzer Hara that's dragging me down, that's making me sin. And I'm having trouble with that struggle. But I am not a person that sins. I'm a person that wants to be close to Hashem, regardless of my shortcomings. That's what's being brought out over here that Yechezkel is seeing. The angels are constantly trying to get close, and there's a barrier that is constantly repelling them. And that is the lesson, the way I understand it, here in the Pesukim. Any questions on this before we go further? Okay, let's move on. I would like to finish the first parak tonight, at long last. Yes. As I understand it, their belief is that a person is in essence evil. Well, that there's whatever the philosophy is, the way to get close to God. But in essence, a person is a bad person. That's not the way we look at people. Okay, we're up to Chaf Dalet 24. And we have to get through Chaf Ches, which is 28. We have 5 psukim. And remember, as I mentioned last week, there's going to be one pasuk which we're not going to discuss because it's dangerous too. Chaf Dalet. I heard the sound of their wings like the sound of much water, like a mass of water, like the sound of God as they went, like the sound of a multitude of people, like the sound of an army. Be'amdam, when they stood, when these angels stood, terapena kanfehen, then their wings were silent, or they were weak. They stopped making the noise. Now let's read one more pasuk. Vayehi kol, there was a sound, me'al larakia ashar rosham, which was from above the sky, the barrier, which was above their heads. Be'amdam, when they stood, when they stopped, terapena kanfehen, then their wings were silent, their wings were weak. They stopped. So there's a sound being made, and the sound is an awesome sound. It's a noise, a cacophony, which is coming from their wings, which sounds like a rush of a mass of water. Sounds like a multitude of people. It sounds like an army. There's the Navi here. Yechezkel is trying to make us understand that this was really, really loud. And he's trying to conjure up memories of something that somebody might have seen in their lifetime or heard in their lifetime that was an incredible sound. And that's what he says over here. You've been to Niagara Falls and heard the sound of the fall. That's to give you an idea of what he's hearing over here. You've ever heard a multitude of people in a stadium making noise all at the same time? That's akin to what he's hearing over here. Now, of course, what he's hearing is going to be much louder because he's in the spiritual realm. It's not a physical realm, and you can't really compare, but he's trying to make it something that we can understand. What sound are the wings making? Think back to our discussions of the wings of the angels. What do the wings do? Okay, the praise of Hashem, the singing to Hashem, for the angels was done through their wings, whatever that means, which we didn't really understand in time, we don't really understand now. They don't talk with their wings, but the wings are creating the shira, the song to Hashem, the praise of Hashem that the angels do. And the angels, if the sound of that praise is an incredible sound, it's a powerful, powerful sound. I heard the sound of the wings, the shira, like the sound of rushing water, much water, like the sound of Hashem as they were going, the sound of a multitude of people, the sound of an army. The Amdam, when they stood, which means when the wings, when they were stopped flying, I guess the wings make them fly, when they stood, Terapenach and Fehen, their wings were silent. What makes the wings silent? The angels are singing to Hashem. You see from this pasuk that they sing sometimes, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do, and when they do, it's an incredible sound, and then there's a time when they don't. We need to understand when they do and when they don't. That's what we need to understand. Similarly, the next pasuk, Vayikol, and there was a sound, Me'al Larakia Ashar Rosham, which came from above the sky, which was above their heads. So it's not coming from the angels. This second sound is not coming from the angels. It's coming from above the sky, which is above the angels, which means it's coming from, okay, from, we're not going to say Hashem, because we don't, from something, from the Shekhinah, from the Kisei HaKavod, from something that's up there, from the presence of Hashem. Be'amdam, when they were still, when they stood, Terapenach and Fehen, their wings were silent. So, this second puzzle gives us a clue. When are they silent? Okay, when there's a sound from above, they're quiet. So the angels are singing with their wings to Hashem, but when there is a voice from above, they're silent. That means in the previous pasuk, when it says that when they were silent, it must be for a different reason. You see, what we see from these two psukim is that they are constantly saying shira. The angels are constantly singing to Hashem. But there are two instances in which they don't, in which they're silent. One is when there is a voice from above, where Hashem is speaking. But there is another time that they're silent. And that isn't clear from the pasuk when that is. Anybody want to make sure it's yes? Okay, I thought that, yeah. Okay. Okay, so you all guess it. That is correct. The angels are silent when we praise Hashem. When we praise Hashem, the angels are silent. The angels' job is to constantly praise Hashem. And let's just digress for one moment to explain what that means. What does it mean that when they use their wings, they're praising Hashem? I can't explain that. But we know that shira, that singing to Hashem, means doing the will of Hashem. Angels are not able to choose to not do the will of Hashem because they're always in the presence of Hashem, so they don't have free will, as we've explained in the past. So they're constantly doing the will of Hashem. So if they're constantly doing the will of Hashem, then they're a constant shira to Hashem. They are constantly praising and singing to Hashem. Now, I'm not saying that they're not actually praising and singing to Hashem. They are. But that is what they do. If you want to know what do angels do all day, all day what angels do is they sing. They praise Hashem. So when do they stop? Right. So they stop when, we see from the second pasuk, when Hashem speaks, they are silent, which means that their praise of Hashem becomes a moot point. Hashem is speaking. Everything has to stop for Hashem. Hashem is about to issue a command. And we'll explain what that is in a moment. And when we praise Hashem, the angels stop.
When we praise we,
the Jews.
Mean the collective we.
The Jews.
Right.
The Jews.
But there are undoubtedly a Jew at least.
Okay. Okay, very good. Very good. The Medrash says that in the morning, when Jews get together to daven, and we say, we mimic the angels. We say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Meloch al Ha'aretz Kivodo. We say that phrase, which is really the phrase of the angels, which you find in Yeshaya. We say, Baruch Kivod Hashem Mimukomo, which you find here in Yechezkel. So, oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. So we say those two phrases, which is mimicking the angels, but the Medrash says that when we say Kadosh, 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 and when we say Baruch Kavod Hashem Yimakomo, even though we are repeating what the angels say, we know it from the angels, but when we say it, the angels are silent. Because when we say it, our praise supersedes their praise. Their praise is great. It's perfect praise. Their praise has to be perfect praise because they can't be evil. So their praise is perfect. But it's not as perfect as our praise. Our praise is more perfect than perfect praise. How can that be? Because we have a choice. Okay. So that's what we were bringing out before. That we can be lifnim mimechitzas hamalachim. We can be within the boundary of the malachim. We can be beyond the angels because we have choice. And when we choose the right thing, we can move beyond the angels. And so they are constantly praising Hashem, and it's pure. It's pristine. There's no sin attached to it. Yet, when we Jews praise Hashem, they're silent. Because there's a recognition that our praise is even greater. Because we have the choice. God forbid when we sin, we're much worse than the angels. But when we do the right thing, if we do it with the correct intentions and we do the right thing, then we are beyond the angels. So the question is that all the time? Is it all the time that our praise supersedes the angels' praise and therefore they should be silent all the time? I would imagine the answer to your question is that it depends whether the praise is done properly or not. When you are all not obligated to come to shul in the morning and daven shacharis, but I will tell you from a man's perspective, davening shacharis, so unfortunately, when you hear the kadosh, 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 it said kadosh, 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 I would imagine that doesn't silence the angels, because that praise isn't really getting to do what it's meant to do. But when a person says it properly, with the proper intentions, with the proper understanding of what he's saying, and trying to say it in a way that really pays homage to our Creator, that silences the angels. Does Hashem want that ultimately the angels should be silenced permanently 24 hours because there's a Jew who's 24 hours is someone who's praising Hashem properly? Of course that's what Hashem wants. Of course that's the goal. And that's what we need to strive for. That silences the angels. What is this command from Hashem that is silencing the angels in the second pasuk? I mean, Hashem's commands should be going on all the time. So what is there that silences the angels? Here, the Medrash says it's really in the Targum, in Targum Yonasan, here on the side in Yechezkel. He explains, and Rashi also brings it, that it is when Hashem is giving his word to the Nevi'im, to the prophets. When Hashem is communicating with the prophets, with the Nevi'im, then the angels are silent. This is a prelude to Perek Beis. You see, the second chapter will be Hashem's speaking directly to Yechezkel. The first of many direct communications with Yechezkel. Now remember, this is a little bit difficult to understand when we learn Navi. The first chapter, the first Perek, is also Hashem communicating with Yechezkel. That's how he saw this vision. It's through Hashem showing him this vision, which is just as much a communication. But it's not Hashem speaking to Yechezkel and telling Yechezkel, tell the people these words. Instead, it's relay these words. Let me explain myself before I twist everything into a pretzel. We explained all the way in the beginning, the words that Yechezkel says here in the first parak are the words that Hashem told him to say. He is repeating the words that Hashem said. But nevertheless, the words are presented as a vision. I saw this. As opposed to the second parak where it's, Hashem said to me, etc. So there's a difference in the way the words are presented, even though they are the words that Hashem told him to say. But in the first parak, he told him to say it in the manner of a vision. In the second parak, he told him to say it in the manner of a command. When Hashem communicates with the Nevi'im, the angels are silent. Why is that? Why? I understand why they're silent when we praise, because our praise is meant to supersede their praise. Why are they silent when Hashem is communicating with the Nevi'im?
Because they're not instructed to tshuva and again to come close to Hashem. So we have to pray to a more spiritual and physical.
So you're saying that's what facilitates the praising of Hashem, is this communication. Okay, that's good. That's good. That's a good answer. Anything else? What does it take to be a Navi, to be a prophet? I heard humble. I heard what else in the back? Okay, that's well said. That's well said. To be a Navi, to be a prophet, I believe we spoke about this. I don't remember if we did or didn't. But to be a Navi, you have to be someone who has reached a level where they are so close to Hashem. We just speak about it? Receiving from Hashem. That's right. You have to be receiving from Hashem. To get to that point where you're on the level of receiving from Hashem, you have to be pretty perfect. You have to be a pretty righteous person. The Rambam writes that if a person would follow the, whatever it is, that they used to have schools to become a Navi. There were actual schools. If you followed the rules of the school, you went to school, you learned all the lessons, you became a Navi. It wasn't haphazard. It's that you learned it, you implemented what you learned, now you are a prophet, which means you now will have a communication from Hashem. Whether that communication is one that will get written down in a book that will be studied 2,000 years later, that already depends on who you are. But that you can become a Navi, you can. Unfortunately, the age of Nevius is over, so we now can't reach that level until Mashiach comes. But that becoming a Navi requires an incredible closeness with Hashem. And I always use this example. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I always use this example, and that is that that one of the things the Rambam writes that a Navi would have to do is, in order to be a Navi, is you have to think about Hashem. You can't be Masiach Das from Hashem. You can't take your mind off of Hashem ever. Ever. 24/7, you have to have your mind on Hashem. No matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, you have to be thinking about Hashem. If you take your mind off Hashem for a second, you can't be a Navi. Think about that next time someone criticizes someone who you know is a Navi. And then remember that whatever the Navim are being criticized for, you got to put it in that light. These are people who never took their minds off of Hashem. And as I always say, try to think of Hashem for 5 minutes. I try it 3 times a day in Shemona Esrei, and it's not so easy. So 24/7 is a pretty lofty level. So when Hashem is communicating with a Navi, there you have a person who is demonstrating what the whole goal is. He's a living demonstration of what it means to rise above the level of the angels, which is what ultimately Hashem wants. That barrier that he has between himself and the angels is meant to be a barrier only to the angels. He wants us to go beyond that barrier. Now, to be sure, we also can't get actually close to Hashem. No creature can, but we can get closer than the angels, beyond that barrier. And that's what Hashem wants. So that their praise is perfect, but a Navi, someone who has merited communication from Hashem, that is a greater praise of Hashem than the song of the prophets, of the angels themselves.
My question is, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was up in Shemayim, he heard kadosh, 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 and that's like how we get it. Here
you're
just hearing noise or sound. How come one person, one Navi, can hear words and
then
like get meaning from the sound, and the other one is just hearing noise?
That's a good question. He will hear Baruch Kavod Hashem in Kamo, as we'll see later. We'll get to it at the end of the second part. So he will hear that. And really, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh comes from Yeshaya. Yeah, that's who it comes from. Moshe may have heard it also, but it's recorded in Yeshaya, and Baruch Kavod Hashem is recorded in Yechezkel. But it's still a good question, because why over here is he saying, I heard noise, and later he describes the word? It's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you right now. But apparently sometimes the Navi picks up the actual words, and sometimes it's just noise. Or maybe he's just trying to bring out to us how loud it was, how powerful it was, to show that when it's night, you know, you think about that also. If it was really, really powerful, the silence is even stronger. An incredible noise, which is in a split second silent, that is an unbelievable thing. That makes an unbelievable impression. Yeah.
Is the noise that he heard from the wind, the noise, is there any way connected to Matan Torah, also the noise, thunder, the lightning,
and the crowds that we were after the mission? Is there any comparison to that? Over there, the Gemara says that when there's an entourage that comes before a king, it's very noisy. And there's thunder, there's lightning, there's fire. And the Gemara says that Hashem is not in the thunder. Really, this is from Eliyahu HaNavi. Hashem is not in the thunder, Hashem is not in the lightning, Hashem is not in the fire. That all precedes Hashem. But then there's a silence, and that's where Hashem is. That's the presence of Hashem, is a complete silence. Because in the presence of Hashem, there can't be any noise, because everything has to halt in the presence of Hashem.
Yeah.
A third choice?
I was just grabbing your also Navi, and it's not that
the that's right.
And we always use the angel as the
ultimate example, which we like, and it's like a nubby is the reason that, you know, like we're learning now,
the
angel is
not even as perfect.
I mean,
perfect because
there's
no choice, but
there are beyond the angel. Okay, that's a good point. The angels are a constant. What Yechezkel saw then is happening now too. We don't have Yechezkel with us now. And we don't see the angels, but they're doing now what he saw too, then. So I think that's why that's what's here for us to learn from, because it's actually happening now, which means that what he saw is relevant to us now. It's the only thing we have. But you're right, that if we had in our presence a Yechezkel, then of course we would learn from him. That would be the thing to see. Sure?
Even the being married,
sure. Absolutely.
Constantly
thinking of Hashem. They did everything that you and I do. Everything. They had to use the bathroom as well. But they constantly thought of Hashem. I'm not saying they constantly thought of Torah. You can't think of Torah in the bathroom. There's a difference. But they constantly thought of Hashem. One is allowed to think of Hashem in the bathroom. Something wrong with that. Thinking about how Hashem is making everything work properly. Having thanks to Hashem for everything working properly. Whatever it is. But they're never losing that focus. That I exist to serve my Creator. My Creator, Shivisi Hashem the Nagvi Summit, I put Hashem in front of me all the time. My existence is solely for the purpose of serving my Creator. That's the attitude a Navi has. And never loses thought. Never loses sight of that thought. It's an unbelievable thing, an incredible thing. Yes? No? No question? Yes? Any question? No? Okay. So let's move on. Let's attempt to finish the parak over here. Pasuk Chaf Vav, Umimal Larakia Ashar Rosham, and from above the sky which was above their heads, Kemari Evan Sapir, there was the appearance of a sapphire stone, Demus Kisei, the appearance of a throne. Veal Demus HaKisei, and on the appearance of the throne, Demus, an appearance, Kemari Adam, like the appearance of Adam, Allah on it, Milmala above it. And I want us to be extremely careful over here. Hashem is not a person. Hashem doesn't look like a person. Hashem has no body. Therefore, he can't be a person in any way. There is no resemblance between Hashem and a person. So I want us to be very careful reading this pasuk, not to, God forbid, even entertain the possibility that what's being described here is the essence of Hashem himself. What is being described over here? The answer is, I don't know. But what I would say is one thing, which is that we know that we are created in the image of Hashem. We know we are a bidmus Elohim. in B'Tselem Elohim. What does it mean to be created in the image of Hashem and the B'Tselem of Hashem? What does that mean? Rashi says it means that we have the capacity to think. We have the capacity to speak. That which which animals do not have. Intelligent thought and speech. I'm not sure if that's what's being brought out over here. If it's just a reverse resemblance. That we are in the image of Hashem, so if you're going to reverse that, in some way, not Hashem himself, of course, God forbid, but the presence of Hashem in some way has some resemblance, not of course, not in a body, but perhaps that means in the free will side of things, we have free will, Hashem has free will. We're the only two entities that have free will. Nothing else has free will. Maybe it's in that way, I don't know. But I do know one has to tread very, very carefully over here. Because even suggesting something the wrong way can be, God forbid, kfira, can be heresy. So you got to be really careful. Yeah?
Is it possible that the image of a man in stone, that is above, that has the angel, and they're looking up to the stone, and they're trying to get up there, that they are constantly reminded that man has to be...
That's very interesting. That's a possibility. That's very interesting. Remember that there was an image of a man himself on the angels, these chayos. The four faces, one face was the face of Yaakov Avinu. So maybe that's an interesting thought. Perhaps you're right about that. I don't know. Now, that's not even the pasuk that is the dangerous pasuk. The next one is the pasuk that Rashi says it's usur, it's forbidden to think deeply about this pasuk. Now, we don't really have the capacity to think deeply. We don't know enough to cross the line. We'll read the pasuk, we'll attempt to translate it, and then we will move on. Va'era, and I saw ke'en chashmal, like the chashmal, remember this chashmal we tried to explain in the beginning of the parak, chashmal is some sort of a vision that he sees, some sort of spiritual thing which we don't understand. Kemare esh beis la saviv, like the appearance of fire within it, around it. Mimare masnav ulamala, from its middle and up. Umimare masnav ulamata, and from its middle and down. Ra'isi kemare esh, I saw the appearance of fire. Vinogach lo saviv, and light to it around it. Now, I'm sure we have a very deep understanding of that, and we will go on to the next pasuk. Kemare ha-keshes, like the appearance of the keshes. What's a keshes? A rainbow. A rainbow. It's an interesting thing. All of a sudden we have a rainbow here. Asheyeh ve'anan b'yom ha-geshem, which will be in the cloud on the day of the rain. What's that all about? Kein mare ha-noga saviv. So is the appearance of the light around. Hu mare d'mus kvod Hashem. That is the appearance of the image of the honor of Hashem. That's the end of the vision. Vo'ereh. Yechezkel now he narrates. I saw this. Vo'epol al panai, I fell on my face. Vo'eshma kol midaber, and I heard the sound of speaking. And that's, now Hashem is going to communicate with him in the next pasuk. And that will be for next week. What is this over here? This appearance of the rainbow that will be in the cloud on the day of the rain. So is the appearance of the light that is around. What is this analogy? What do you think of automatically when you hear the rainbow that will be on the day of, in the cloud on the day of the rain?
Noah.
How can you not think of Noah? You think of Noah right away. What is the rainbow in Noah? We do not have the time to develop the whole thought of a rainbow and Noah, and of course is a whole shear in and of itself. But what is the idea, at least in short, of this rainbow and Noah? Let's first at least get the basics down. There was a flood. Hashem destroyed the world. And then Noah emerges from the Teva, and what happens? Okay, Hashem makes a covenant with Noah. And what is the covenant? That what? What is Hashem? He will never destroy the world completely. That he will never do. That's the covenant. And when he makes that covenant with Noah, he shows him a keshet, he shows him a rainbow. And that is the symbol of this covenant, of this covenant between Noah, between Hashem and man, that he will never destroy the world completely again. We see rainbows all the time. However, the Nitziv writes, and I don't fully understand this Nitziv, maybe some of you will understand this better than me, but the Nitziv writes that there are two types of rainbows. There's a regular rainbow, and then there is the rainbow that appears right before a storm. He writes, it seems that as a storm is coming in, you can often see a rainbow that precedes the storm. This is a rainbow that is rarely seen. I don't know if anybody has experience with this, but a rainbow that precedes a storm. That's the rainbow that is being described in Parashat Noach. Not just any rainbow, it's a rainbow that precedes the storm. The storm is coming in, it's so to speak, to destroy, and Hashem puts the rainbow in front of it to say, I will not destroy the world. That I will not do. This is my covenant, this is my guarantee, my symbol, that I will not destroy the world. We have to understand, of course, why is a rainbow a symbol of not destroying the world? And that's what we don't have time to do tonight. That's really a Noach class. But why is that being brought up over here? The Gemara tells us that very righteous generations, like the generation of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, did not need a rainbow. They didn't need the guarantee of Hashem, which means most generations, people sin during those generations. And since people sin, there is reason for Hashem to destroy the world. But he doesn't do it. He doesn't do it because he made a covenant with Noach that he will never do that. And so, those generations need the keshes, need the rainbow, as a symbol that Hashem won't do it. It means that Hashem would have done it had there not been the covenant with Noah, the bris with Noah, but he won't do it. And this rainbow appears to show that he remembers the covenant and he will not do it. But some generations don't need the rainbow. The very righteous generations don't need it because they're so righteous that Hashem wouldn't have destroyed the world anyway, even without the covenant with Noah. That's the generation that don't need the keshes. The generation of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is one of those generations, which incidentally, and this is only going to whet your appetite, but I don't have time to explain it, but this is incidentally why on Lag BaOmer, which is the yard site of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the day that he died, and we celebrate him on Lag BaOmer, that's part of what's going on Lag BaOmer. What do the children play with, especially in Israel? A bow and arrow. And what is a bow? The word in Hebrew is the same word. Keshes, rainbow, bow, it's the same word. Keshes, that's what a bow and arrow is, that's what a rainbow is. And that is why the bow and arrow is associated with Lag BaOmer, because in the generation of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, they didn't need the keshes. They didn't need the bow, the rainbow. Again, that's too much for tonight. At any rate, why is that being brought up over here? Okay, excellent. This is the generation of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. They do deserve to be destroyed. And Yechezkel was seeing a vision. And remember, it started with the chariot of Hashem coming from the north, which was to show that he had come from making the Nebuchadnezzar powerful, which he would eventually come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Within this vision, and Yechezkel, as we mentioned all the way in the beginning, is going to see some very disturbing visions, which we're going to have to discuss. And the first several nevuahs that he has are not fun to read. They all speak of destruction. But it's all in the backdrop of this rainbow. Even within the destruction that is going to be described, what does Yechezkel see? He sees the rainbow. Nothing is going to be a total destruction. The world won't be totally destroyed, and we Jews will never be totally destroyed. Even though the temple is about to be destroyed, and the Jews are going to be dragged into exile, there's going to be terrible, terrible suffering that's about to happen, but the Jews will endure, no matter what. There's a covenant, and that covenant is manifest by the rainbow. Next week in Mirat Hashem, we will begin Perek Beis. Those of you who would like to prepare ahead, I would recommend you do the entire chapter. I don't know that we'll finish the whole chapter next week, but that was what we were going to attempt to do, is do the entire chapter next week.